briefly into the sixth chapter. I believe we covered this last week, didn't we? We didn't. The sixth chapter, Daniel's experience. I pause just a moment and say this is Darius. And in the tenth chapter, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, Daniel was still in the eastern kingdom. He did not return to Jerusalem. I mentioned earlier, before some of you came in, that there are Daniel's mentioned in Ezra and Nehemiah. One of these, it says that they were Levites, and of the other one, it said he's mentioned among a group, and it said these were the priests. And Daniel 1 shows that Daniel was of the tribe of Judah and was of the seed royal. And he couldn't have officiated as a priest for different reasons. The sixth chapter says that Darius was pleased to set over the kingdom 120 princes and make Daniel among the three. And he was preferred above the other presidents. And so a little conniving began. Politics is politics in all ages. They call this the period of the election. I personally believe that there are more lies told during an election period than any other time in the year. Now, I'm not just joking. It's funny, but I believe it. That there are more lies told and more false promises made. When Mr. Hoover was running for president, his motto was two cars in every garage and two chickens in every pot. And before it was over, people didn't even have a pot. I don't think he was to blame. I think it was just like it is now. Everything just got out of kilter, and men didn't have enough sense to bring it about, to make a change. So they sought an occasion against Daniel in the fourth verse. They had to reach the conclusion that the only way they could blame him was in connection with his God. I can imagine how they sat up way in the night talking, how will we do this now? Well, we'll get up a petition and have the king sign it, that nobody can pray to anyone but to him for 30 days. Darius fell to their flattery. It's too bad that good people are easily flattered many times. How often has this happened? Brother Sherman, I don't think that name even rings a bell with any of you. He was a precious minister that used to be among us. Told me a story about a man that had the name that nobody could flatter him. The fellow said, I'll flatter him. And he went out to see him early in the morning. When he came to the door, he said, I hear you're the man that can't be flattered. And the man smiled. He was flattered over his inability to be flattered. They flattered Darius, and then he realized that he had gotten himself into a trap. Daniel kept his windows open toward heaven. Back in the book of 2 Chronicles, I think maybe we'll turn to that quickly. 2 Chronicles, about the 6th chapter, and maybe the 39th verse. In the 37th verse, yet if they bethink themselves in the land whither they are carried captive, and turn and pray unto thee in the land of their captivity. But it is stated here that they were to pray toward Jerusalem. I don't just see the verse, but it's in the course of his prayer. And then God would hear. And this is why Daniel had his windows open toward Jerusalem. They were, doesn't say he opened them, this would have been courting, soliciting trouble. But if he had closed the windows, then he would have been shrinking. He decided not to do either one. And notice, toward the land and toward the city. That's right. And that's why he was praying toward Jerusalem. Now, if people say, well, those things don't amount to anything. It was, and why did it amount to something? It was written in the Word of God. Now, we can pray any time, but we don't pray toward the city. I was in what was called Idlewild Airport one time. I believe they changed it to Kennedy. And I couldn't get my camera out in time. One of the busiest airports in life. And there were five Mohammedans. Got their prayer blanket out and spread it right out on the floor, and everybody had to walk around them, and they got down on their knees and toward Mecca. Mecca or Medina, I've forgotten which they prayed toward, but I believe it's Mecca. And their second holy city, I think, is Medina. Anyway, this is why Daniel prayed in that direction, and he prayed three times a day. I like that. We make it a habit of praying once a day, usually. I'll say I pray more than that because I call on people nearly every day, and when I go into home, I have prayer. And I was thinking tonight, I offered thanks at the table, and as I prayed, I was thinking to myself how uninspiring my prayer sounded. Had a good meal, but I was too enthused about it. Well, Daniel prayed, and I'm sure he prayed fervently. And so they were watching, of course, and they went and asked the king if he hadn't done this, if he hadn't signed the decree, and he answered, of course, that he had. They said, that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, still a slave, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh us a petition three times a day. Now they had said that all the presidents had gotten together for this. They lied. And the king was sore displeased, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver Daniel, but he didn't have any success. Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, O king, the law of the Medes and the Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king establishes may be changed. Now if you will think for a moment, they wouldn't have pulled this on Nebuchadnezzar. He hadn't liked what they'd done. He'd have fed them to the lions at the beginning. His word was law. And you know, there could have been many expediences. He might have said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to kill every oxen around, throw them in the lion's den before I put him in. But he didn't do that. He could have said, well, I'm going to kill the lions first before I throw him in. But God didn't want it that way. I marvel at what God allows. Now, I'll tell you frankly, if God has a plan in your life, the devil has a plan against it. And God seems to let his friends undergo some pretty severe things. Joseph, sold as a slave at 17, and youth passed him by. I doubt if he ever went out with a group of youth in his life, don't you? 30 years of age, when he came to his place of authority, imagine Daniel or David was riding pretty high, married to the king's daughter, over the men of war, suddenly an outlaw, and actually his wife taken and given to another man. You'd have thought he would have hated Saul, but he continually called him the Lord's anointed and killed a man for saying that he killed Saul. And the Lord didn't tell Paul, he didn't say to Ananias, I'm going to show him that he's going to write from books of the New Testament. I'm going to show him that he's going to have great revival meetings. He's going to have miracles. He said, I'll show him how great things he's going to suffer for my namesake. And if you want to know some of them, read the 11th chapter, 2 Corinthians. A night and a day in the deep. I wonder if he's floating around on some old piece of board or when he's shipwrecked. Been shipwrecked at different times, of which you have no record in the book of Acts. The record that we do have came after he wrote that book. The king went to the cave, or the pit, the dungeon, whatever it was. He told Daniel at first, thy God will deliver thee. And they brought a stone, put it, sealed it with the king's seal. Imagine Daniel rested, but the king didn't. He fasted, no instruments of music. His sleep went from him. He rose early, came and called with a lamentable voice. This particular Hebrew word doesn't occur else in the Old Testament. Is thy God, servant of the living God, is thy God whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee? And Daniel said, O king, live forever. The Lord sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths. They have not hurt me. Remember the statement in the 11th chapter of Hebrews that by faith they stopped the mouths of lions. Before him innocency was found in me, and before have I done no hurt. They took Daniel up. Then you'll notice something that is simply oriental justice. It doesn't mean that God put his approval on this because the women and children were not guilty, as far as we know. But remember that Darius was just a heathen king. He wasn't a Christian man. They brought those men which had accused Daniel. They cast them into the den of lions, them and their children, their wives, and the lions had the mastery of them, and break all their bones in pieces, or ever they came at the bottom of the den. Horrible case of oriental justice, but perhaps God may have been in it. I always feel sorry for a man. The Lord said concerning Israel one time, he that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. What would you do to a man, or how would you feel like it if a man came and insisted on, for no reason, just lifting your eyelid and rubbing your eyeball? You'd feel like putting him in his place, which would be, you'd think, probably flat of his back on the ground. Well, again, a testimony. How often God builds up to a testimony for himself. Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages, peace be multiplied unto you. And then he gave a testimony about God, his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth. He had said earlier that that God whom you serve can rescue ye, worketh signs and wonders. Darius prospered, or rather Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. At this time, according to archaeological chronology, Darius was just a second king in the kingdom. Cyrus was the first one. Remember, we will learn later, the goat had two horns, the higher came up last, Cyrus.